Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I can't control myself. Got me calling out for help. Someone help me. It's not healthy for me to feel this way. Oh, you are making.
In a struggling music industry, the touring circuit was supposed to be the one sure thing until this summer. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Today, the concert business sends an SOS. Plus, a SmackDown debate on the revived but troubled Lilith Fair tour. And later, live music from the relentlessly touring indie punk stalwarts Ted Leo and The Pharmacists. This singer, Rihanna, has scored 6 number one singles, the most for a female artist in the past decade. But this summer, Rihanna is one of many major acts canceling performances. The Eagles, John Mayer, the Jonas Brothers, they've all scrapped a handful of shows. U2, Christina Aguilera, and Limp Bizkit have postponed entire tours. Joining us by phone to help explain the concert crisis is Chris Richards. He's pop critic for the Washington Post. Hey, Chris.
How's it going?
Well, apparently not so well. Why is that? Why is the concert scene in such trouble this summer?
It's so hard to say right now. Like you just mentioned earlier, you know, concerts are supposed to be the music industry's new bread and butter. CD sales are in the toilet and have been for years.
Right.
So a lot more bands are hitting the road. I think what we're seeing and what I've learned from the interviews I've done with a lot of people in the industry is that the tour market is really crowded right now. And there are so many acts out there on the road. Concertgoers are being very careful with their money because they don't have a lot of it. They got to choose carefully which shows they're going to go to. And it's a very, very crowded market right now.
So there is the economy to contend with. But, you know, what about ticket prices? How much does that have to do with this?
I think ticket prices has a lot to do with it. It's a tough thing to say right now because when I was first reporting a story for the Washington Post a couple weeks ago about this, the concert season hadn't really been fully underway yet. It was just a lot of speculation about, you know, is it really going to be a hard time? And now we're starting to see a lot more evidence of that with all these cancellations. And I think the ticket prices definitely have something to do with that. In Washington, D.C., the Eagles were scheduled to play a big concert with the Dixie Chicks and Keith Urban on June 15th, which was suddenly scrapped. For scheduling purposes, said Live Nation, the promoter. But I think ticket prices might have had something to do with it based on a lot of fans that I talked to in the area. They were asking between $55 and $240 a ticket. And that's a lot to ask right now. So while Live Nation didn't say that ticket prices were the reason or underselling tickets was the reason that the show was canceled, a lot of fans here believe that to be the case.
Well, in 1996, the average concert ticket price was about $26. It rose each year to an all-time high of $67 in 2008. It's dropped a little bit, but still, I mean, even given inflation and what was happening in the economy in the late 90s and the early years of this decade, that's an amazing kind of, it's more than doubling the average price of a concert ticket. Does that carry through? I mean, you know, when you're talking about arena rock and the big pop stars, that's one thing. But do we see this trickling down to club dates, to the bands that make their living by touring constantly?
I think so, but it's a little bit more of a mixed bag just because there are so many levels and so many different size venues of clubs. You know, I'd love to hear Ted Leo talk about that. I know he's someone who's kind of defended his ticket prices and kept them low over the years.
We'll be asking him that when he comes in with the band later.
Yeah, that would be great. But yeah, I think, I mean, I talked to Gary Bongiovanni, who's a guy who's often quoted in stories about the concert industry. He's the editor at Polestar, which is the leading magazine on the concert industry. And, you know, he said to me this startling stat that always blows me away is the average concert goer goes to one show a year. You know, which is insane. I think listeners of your show go to many, many. I mean, you're obviously catering to music fans, and I think we lose sight of that as music journalists. We're entrenched in this world where we're at concerts every night. But the average concert goer goes to one show a year. So imagine if you're, you know, doling out all your money for one big gig, and then it gets canceled. Are you willing to do that again for a second show? You know, it's a gambling game this summer, I think.
So who's winning in this gamble? I mean, who's not feeling the pinch?
It looks like there are two beacons of hope in the pop world, and their names are Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift, who are just doing magnificently. I think Washington is kind of a nice barometer for how things are doing nationally, and Taylor Swift did two shows sold out here at the Verizon Center recently, and everyone points to them as the hopes that, you know, this thing isn't dead and we can transition from a CD-based economy in the music industry to a concert-based economy. But like I said, it's just a really crowded market, and I think a lot of Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift fans are former Jonas Brothers fans who had to cancel almost 20 shows recently. They took a massive beating this summer, and I think when those numbers come in the fall, it's gonna look really bad for those guys. So I think, again, it's a really crowded market, it's very competitive, and those ticket prices make it harder to buy a lot of tickets each summer.
All right, well, as Chris Richards has just told us, you know, the hope is that the music industry, it's sort of being pushed in this direction anyway, goes from a CD-based economy to a live touring-based economy, but that economy is in the dumps right now as we head through the summer of 2010. Chris Richards is the pop music critic for The Washington Post. Chris, thanks for checking in with us today.
Hey, it's always a pleasure.
This is Soundcheck.
Live in a church where you sleep with voodoo dolls.
Up next, the singer Sarah McLachlan, whom you're hearing in the background, launched the Lilith Fair Tour with high hopes in the 90s, but lately the tour is struggling. So, is it relevant or a relic? It's our Soundcheck Smackdown debate coming up in a moment. And later, live music from singer-songwriter and DIY veteran Ted Leo and the Pharmacists. And don't forget to join Soundcheck in the green space for a live performance by the cast and band from the Broadway musical Fela, playing the music of Fela Kuti on Thursday, July 22nd at 2 p.m. For tickets, go to wnyc.org/soundcheck. Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. Lilith Fair is back this summer after being gone for 11 years. In its original run, Sarah McLachlan's all-female music festival drew 1.5 million fans and raised over $10 million for women's charities. But things haven't gone so well for the 2010 reboot. A dozen shows have been canceled due to sluggish ticket sales, and this artist, Kelly Clarkson, is one of the few headliners who quit the tour outright. Many are now wondering, is Lilith Fair still relevant or just a relic? It's the topic of this week's
Soundcheck Smackdown.
Joining us to help decide are Marissa Meltzer, author of the book Girl Power, The 90s Revolution in Music. She's here with me in the studio, and joining us on the phone from Washington, D.C. is Amanda Hess, who writes a sex and gender column called The Sexist for the Washington City Paper. Amanda, Marissa, thank you both for being here. Marissa, let me start with you. I mean, at a time when women account for just about half of the top 20 Billboard artists out there, is Lilith Fair relevant or is it a relic?
Well, I would say that it went from relic to relevant, at least for me. When Lilith Fair first came around in the late 90s, I was in college, and I had grown up with a great deal of cultural privilege. It was a time when there were plenty of strong women in music, and I had grown up going to all-ages punk shows and seen plenty of all or mostly female bands. And so by the time Lilith came around, I had been in that, you know, scene or as a fan of women in music for several years. And a lineup of Sarah McLachlan and her coterie just felt like an aesthetic that had nothing to do with me or my friends. It felt more like something that my mother would have enjoyed.
This is strange. So the original Lilith Fair for you was the relic, but yeah. Now you're saying it's relevant. Why?
Well, part of it is I've reconciled some of my teenage snobbery and realized that Lilith Fair is a really powerful force for certain women. I interviewed girls who had, you know, really radicalizing moments going to the original Lilith Fair. I'm not going to begrudge anyone that. Plus, the lineup of this one is much more diverse.
Which we'll get to in a moment. But Amanda, what about you? I mean, what was your experience of the first iteration of Lilith Fair, and why do you think it's not so important now?
Well, the original Lilith lineup, you know, it was vilified for being a white adult contemporary singer-songwriter, like patchouli-scented, earnest lineup. But at least that was an ethos, right? So, like, personally, I would have rather banged my head against the wall than go and sat through, like, a Sarah McLachlan, Paula Cole double bill concert. But in 1997, some women really liked that music, and Lilith Fair was for those women. They went and filled the seats. What we're seeing now is that Lilith, I think, has tried to shed some of that stigma. But in that place, it's totally failed to define itself as something else. So the defining characteristic that I see with Lilith Fair now is women, you know? And the problem is that women don't all like all music by all women. And so in diversifying the lineup, I think they're alienating their base and then not really getting a core group of women who are interested in, like, a particular type of music to come fill those seats now.
So even though you didn't like that particular type of music 10 or 11 years ago, it was something that gave it some cohesion that you think the current version doesn't have?
Right. I mean, I think the branding now has been really unremarkable, like particularly not memorable. And I think that's really been a problem for Lilith Fair. And so it needed to do something, whether it was branding it as a, you know, continued political movement, a feminist movement, a consciousness-raising movement, or just aesthetically, you know, having something to tie these artists together so that women who like those artists would go buy tickets.
Well, Soundcheck listeners, what do you think of the new Lilith Fair? Is it relevant? Is it a relic? We'd like to hear from you, too. You can call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. Or you can leave a comment on the website at wnyc.org/soundcheck. And we'll take some of your calls and comments in a moment. Again, the number 212-433-WNYC. Marissa, Amanda doesn't like exactly the thing that you left us with, which is, you know, the idea of the diversification of...
Well, I think, you know, one thing I spoke with Sarah McLachlan about once when I interviewed her, she said the problem that so many people had with Lilith Fair was that either it was too feminist or not feminist enough. And I kind of don't see why Lilith has to take any kind of stand politically or aesthetically. Why can't it be something for everyone? In, you know, the early 90s, you had something like Lollapalooza, which was a diverse lineup, yes, within these vague constraints of, you know, so-called alternative rock, mm-hmm. but it was everything from, you know, rap to something more acoustic to something more industrial. Why can't Lilith be something for everyone? Why can't you have three generations of women going together, one wanting to see, you know, Rihanna, another wanting to see Carly Simon, another wanting to see Sugarland?
Amanda, why can't you have that?
Well, I mean, especially in this concert climate, I think when you're trying to make a concert that's for all women, you end up sort of making it for no women. So, you know, in theory, the lineup is pretty exciting, and it combines these, you know, mainstays that might be more accessible to older women with more, like, innovative artists that might, you know, pick the interests of younger women. But if you look at the individual tour dates, the selection is a lot more limited.
Well, let's look at some of the selection. Here's just to give you an idea of what we're talking about. The 2010 edition of Lilith Fair does feature Sarah McLachlan as the sort of the constant in all of the events. But there are, you know, several other people who are, you know, involved, and we can listen to some of them in a moment. But first, here's some of what the original Lilith Fair sounded like, so you can compare and contrast.
Weightless, and maybe I'll find some peace tonight in the arms of the angel. Fly away from here, from this dark cold.
Through my front porch, the dandelion sun scorching like a glass of cold lemonade.
I will do the laundry if you play it.
So from the 1997 Lilith Fair, Sarah McLachlan, we heard a little bit of Angel, Paula Cole and her hit Where Have All the Cowboys Gone, and Joan Osborne's hit song One of Us. That's what Lilith Fair sounded like when it was first making waves in the concert biz. As I mentioned at the top of the segment, 1.5 million people went to see these shows. It raised over $10 million for women's charities. It's just not happening the same way this summer. This is what the current lineup of Lilith Fair includes. I suppose part of how you approach the current edition of Lilith Fair is, sort of depends on how much you like having your neck sort of, you know, moved from one side really quickly to the other. I mean, with sort of head-snapping quickness, we went from Cat Power to Mary J. Blige to Carly Simon, all of them taking part in this year's lineup of Lilith Fair. And for Marissa Meltzer, author of Girl Power, The 90s Revolution in Music, that's a good thing. Amanda Hess, who writes the sexist column for Washington City Paper, doesn't think it's such a great idea. And right now, Amanda, it seems like a lot of people are on your side of the fence because 12 of these concerts, or 13, depending on who's talking, have already been canceled. Do you see that as a response specifically to the music, or is there something deeper at work with Lilith Fair?
I mean, there are a lot of great artists who are playing Lilith Fair. I think what is remarkable is how the concert has totally failed to rebrand itself at all. So the interesting thing about the new lineup is that there is this sort of inherent feminist consciousness to going to Lilith Fair, seeing all these different artists and taking in, you know, music by women, whether you like them or not. But what Lilith Fair has done is sort of distance itself from taking any sort of, like, political consciousness or taking up any cause. I mean, one of the biggest stories that's come out of Lilith Fair this year concerned the women's charities that Lilith always donates proceeds to, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, people were allowed to vote on what women's charities they would want Lilith Fair to give their money to. And what happened was some women were concerned that some of the possible women's charities were actually crisis pregnancy centers, which I might describe more accurately as like anti-women women's charities. And the way that Lilith Fair chose to deal with that dust up was to take off all the crisis pregnancy centers from the possible charity list, and also to take off some abortion rights groups as well.
Hmm.
So they're really just trying to distance themselves from any sort of political or feminist statement, and I think that maybe that was a mistake for them.
Marissa, you were asking just a few moments ago whether Lilith Fair had to be political, had to do this sort of thing.
Right. I mean, the fact that they're giving any money at all to charities is pretty radical in this economy and for such a big stadium tour. Also, women, even if they dominate the music charts as musicians, they're still considered novelties. And to group them all together in one traveling giant mainstream tour, that's enough of a feminist statement for me, you know, until we're further along. And if it's going to get people in middle America, if it's going to get, you know, parents who wouldn't maybe want their daughters to go to a feminist music festival, then great.
Well, now Amanda raises the point of the brand of Lilith Fair. And on the line with us now is Tracy from Westchester, who I think wants to weigh in on that topic. Right, Tracy?
Hello, yes. I was just thinking that I think maybe part of the ticket sale problem may have been rooted from just the simple act of calling it Lilith Fair. Because many years ago, this concert series was going on, and it has a certain association, and people think of certain things, and they think of that. And now, currently, this new version, if you want to call it, of Lilith Fair has a whole new lineup. And as you're describing, it doesn't have this political, or they're trying not to have this political undertone. But when people think of Lilith Fair, they think of the older the older, you know, few years ago concert. So I think maybe, you know, just the name is part of the problem.
That's it's an interesting point. And again, Soundcheck listeners, we want to hear your side of this debate as well. Our number is 212-433-WNYC, or leave a comment on the WNYC.org/soundcheck page. Marissa, what about, you know, Sarah's decision not just to restart the tour, but to restart it with that old name? And there is a certain amount of baggage that goes with it.
Well, I don't think baggage is necessarily a bad thing when you had three very successful, very profitable years not so long ago. I think it probably would have been foolish for her to try to rebrand it when she's so closely associated with it. I don't think she would have been fooling anyone. And regardless of whether, you know, you call it Lilith Fair or not, it's still going to have a stigma or just be considered the traveling tour of women by Sarah McLachlan. It's easy to make fun of, but what else do we have?
Well, I mean, I guess, Amanda, I'll throw that question to you. I mean, you know, this is really the nub of our argument, isn't it? Is do we need Lilith Fair in the year 2010?
I think there's so much space for Lilith Fair. I just am not sure that this Lilith Fair is the one that we need. I mean, I know it was mentioned earlier that the one constant across all of these dates is Sarah McLachlan, who, you know, organized the tour. So what it really becomes is more a test of her fan base and her staying power than anything else. And, you know, personally, I'm not sure if this year is the right year for her to try and launch this tour, you know, on her own back. I mean, I'm not sure that she has the fan base right now to really make that successful.
Well, Sarah was on our program last month, and we took the opportunity to ask her, you know, what is the place of Lilith Fair in the current music scene? And this is what she told us.
Is there still inequality? Absolutely. Was that the initial reason for putting this on? No, it was not. I just wanted to get to see and hear all these amazing women and be part of it and create a community. I mean, that's sort of something that just naturally and organically happened anyway. And, you know, I'm so excited for that element to come back, to that sense of connection and community.
What about that idea of community? How important is that to the whatever this ended up being called? And obviously she did go with the old name of Lilith Fair. Marissa, how important do we overlook that element at our peril?
Probably. I think it's incredibly important. I think many women who are on large tours probably don't get to see not only just fellow female artists, but, you know, women behind the scenes all the time as well. I know that when I was interviewing Jill Scott, for example, about going on the Lilith tour, she said the part that she was by far the most excited about was to share the stage with so many powerful women, not all of whom she was familiar with, but to kind of be acquainted and to feel that female energy. You know, she said that whenever you get a big group of women together, there's a special feeling there, and I would absolutely agree with that.
All right, we're talking about Lilith Fair, the tour that was put together by singer-songwriter Sarah McLachlan back in the 90s, in which she has resurrected this year, but things have not gone to plan. A number of concerts have been canceled. We have comments in a moment, but John from Manhattan joining us on the line. John, what's your take on Lilith Fair? Is it relevant or is it a relic of an older time?
I think a lot of the problem is Sarah McLachlan herself. She was a newer commodity in the 90s, I think. But since then, I think, you know, I was thinking about this when I heard her on your show last week. Every one of her songs sounds exactly the same, and she's probably the most unexciting live performer I've ever seen.
Hmm.
How is there anyone in the world who, you know, could you imagine going on YouTube and has anyone ever sent you a Sarah McLachlan performance on YouTube and said, oh, look at this or something? Can you imagine? You need somebody exciting to lead a tour like this. And, she, you know, she's just not it.
But she does have some great people with her on this tour. And that seems not to be attracting. Do you sort of agree with, I don't remember who said this a couple of minutes ago, but the fact that, you know, we're looking at Sarah McLachlan's fan base? Is it not just Sarah McLachlan, but that fan base that's the problem?
I'm not sure, but, I mean, who are you excited to see who's on the tour this time?
Well, I would kind of love to see Loretta Lynn.
I was going to say Loretta Lynn.
Cat Power.
There is a real problem with consistency, and I will definitely offer that criticism. There are so many great bands playing Lilith Fair, you know, The Gossip, Loretta Lynn,
right.
The Bengals, Mary J. Blige. I would like to see them all. Unfortunately, I live in New York, so it is Sarah McLachlan. And
don't ever say that. Don't ever say, unfortunately, I live in New York.
I don't know if any city gets the dream lineup. It wasn't New York for reasons I will not understand, but... You know, I am very excited to see the Indigo Girls and Selena Gomez together on the same stage.
So you are going to go see some portion of
the
tour.
I'm going with my two best friends.
Amanda, what about you? Despite reservations, are you going to go to one of these concerts?
I was definitely planning on going to the Washington, D.C. one, even though some of my favorite artists are not going to be there. Erykah Badu's not going to be there. Janelle Monáe won't be there. But I have a brother's wedding to go to, so I'm going to miss it this time around.
All right. Let's see what some of our Soundcheck listeners have been saying on the Soundcheck page of our website, as we often do. Into the control room we go to check in with producer Joel Meyer. Joel?
John, our listener Cynthia from Long Island continues her unbeaten streak of tough love comments on the Soundcheck page. Cynthia writes, relic then, relic now. The whole idea of having a show full of women just because they're women is the opposite of empowering. Just make good music. Being good at what you do is empowering. Chris from Montclair leaves this comment. The problem with Lilith is that it was gone for too long. But John, Chris also leaves a comment about our guests Marissa and Amanda that I think is interesting and they might want to speak to. Chris writes, I went to Lilith back in the day. These women sound way too young to have any real understanding of Lilith beyond being a relic of a cheesy past that their parents enjoyed.
All right.
Well, I'm turning 33 tomorrow, so I do think I was quite of age when Lilith was around. And also, I mean, this gets to the heart of the matter of women in music. People love to get very paternal and patriarchal when it comes to women making music, sharing opinions, being loud in any format. I feel quite confident that as someone who wrote a book with a chapter partially about Lilith Fair, and Amanda has certainly chimed in many times, we are both more than qualified to espouse our opinions. Although I am interested in any man who went to Lilith Fair.
Yeah.
I want to hear more from them.
Amanda?
Well, I'm 25, so when the first one came around, I think 97 to 99, I was 12 to 14, which I think is squarely within Lilith Fair. I think they want,
absolutely,
you know, young women. So
they wouldn't have Selena Gomez on this year's bill if they weren't after teenagers. And I know that Sarah McLachlan had really wanted Lady Gaga and Miley Cyrus at her daughter's request. But, you know, unfortunately that didn't work out.
So it's not a generation thing, then. It's a genuine kind of non-meeting of the minds. It's a genuine disagreement that has been at the root of our Soundcheck Smackdown this week on Lilith Fair. Relevant or relic, it is back. It is in trouble. A number of events canceled. And we've been speaking with Marissa Meltzer here in the studio, author of Girl Power, The 90s Revolution in Music, and on the phone with Amanda Hess from the Washington City Paper, where she writes the sexist column. Marissa, Amanda, thank you both for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you so much.
I've been down a long road. I've become straight to myself.
Straight ahead, the singer-songwriter Ted Leo recently said that his days as a touring full-time musician might be winding down. We'll find out what he meant, and we'll hear some live music in our studio from Ted Leo and the Pharmacists next.
Check out today's Soundcheck blog.
When Sarah McLachlan was on Soundcheck, she said, Lilith Fair isn't a need, it's a want. I don't need to see Loretta Lynn or Metric or Cat Power or Janelle Monáe, but if Lilith Fair can get all of them into one show, I want that too.
For the rest of the story, visit the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org.